Hi, it's Chad Griffiths. I'm the host of the Industrial Real Estate Show, and I'm glad you're here. After you listen to it, please consider leaving a review on our Apple or Spotify page and check out any more episodes to see how you can learn more about the industrial real estate market. Well, good afternoon, everybody. As always, I am very excited for this week's episode. If you've tuned into previous shows, you know that I like covering a broad variety of topics. We've interviewed investors and lawyers and property developers, other brokers. And this one is a bit unique. I did have a conversation with another social media expert, Beverly, who joins in on this show sometimes. So hopefully she's joined in and tuned in as well. This one's going to be really special because the guest, Aviva Sonnenreich, has over 1 million followers on TikTok. And I don't even have a TikTok account. So this is going to be an interesting conversation on just exploring how she's had success in that field. I put a question on Twitter the other day, and I had a number of questions come in for Aviva, so we'll get to those as well. But I'm excited just to jump in and explore this more. So Aviva, thank you so much for joining me on the call.
Thank you for having me, Chad. I love your podcast, and so I was very excited to get the opportunity to chat.
I'm really looking forward to this because likewise, I'm a fan of yours as well. And I love the content that you're creating because you don't hold anything back. It's not just sitting at a desk being very dry and very boring. You are letting your personality show. And I'm sure that that's been instrumental in the success you've had. Over 1 million followers on TikTok, 40,000 plus on Instagram. Getting to see your personality, I feel like I already know you. And you probably get that comment a lot that when people are watching your content, they feel that they already know you before they've even met you. Before we get into that, what was your background? I know you're a third generation commercial real estate pro. Maybe start on how you got into the industry, how being the third generation was part of that, and then how you got to where you are today.
Sure. So my grandparents fled Nazi Germany and came to Denver, Colorado in 1950. Epic immigrant story, true real estate, you know, came with nothing, duplex, triplex, motels, car lots into the first warehouse, which was bought in our family in 1984. Something interesting is my dad always told me because I was third generation, I was going to ruin everything and spend all the money. And so that put a chip on my shoulder to do the opposite and continue to build our family business of commercial real estate. We have a portfolio that we own, lease, and manage, and then we do third-party brokerage as well. I had a stint as a DJ for about 8 years, and before I got too deep into real estate, and what I learned marketing in music, essentially what I learned in the music industry was how to market. And I took, as a DJ, it's really hard to market because there's so many DJs, nobody cares until you're really famous. And so I took the strategies I learned as a marketer for our DJ band and I applied it to commercial real estate. And what I noticed in posting about commercial real estate on the internet was it was the exact opposite of my music career. I had so little competition and people actually wanted to consume the content, a light bulb went off that I should continue to post. So that's how we got here. I started into commercial 7 or 8 years ago. We mostly do industrial. I have a company called The Warehouse Hotline. And I love these warehouses and I just love learning about them and transacting them. So
you and I share that in common is that I've been doing this for 17 years, I believe now, and I still love it. I still love being in the business, but I still love learning things because I feel that the day that you feel you know everything or think you know everything about the business is the day that you probably need to get out of the business because it is a constant learning experiment. And that's why I'm just so excited to talk to you because I know very little about TikTok. I don't even have an account. I'm able to see your TikToks by searching on that without having an account. But aside from watching your videos, and maybe I've watched some sporadic ones here and there, I know very little about it. So as a guy that has a mustache right now, because I'm doing Movember, so it does look, I acknowledge that it's not a very good mustache and it does look creepy, but a guy with a mustache is probably going to ask this question. So it's suiting that I have it. Sell me on TikTok.
Sure. MySpace was the first social media platform that came up. I was in middle school. It was awesome. And what I saw happen was MySpace got really hot and then it fell because Facebook was becoming cool. So everybody went from MySpace to Facebook. Then Facebook had a 10-year glory run. And soon I watched people start leaving Facebook, moving over to Instagram. What that those 15 years showed me was that no social media platform is here to stay, and that you need to be comfortable being nimble and trying to navigate towards the next platform. The reality of the situation is as much as we want to control where we post, right? I want to have full control over the reality is we don't control where the consumer is. And so I started hearing rumblings about TikTok before the pandemic. People started to say, get on. And pandemic hits. And it was like our phone stopped ringing for 3 months. And so many people had told me TikTok was the next platform, which it is and was. I just decided to dive in head first. And I feel I'm very glad I did. The reality is everybody's on TikTok right now. And it's like, I could get the rebuttal. Well, warehouse owners aren't on TikTok. That's not in my experience because I meet property owners from TikTok all the time. So I don't get to choose the platform. I just lean into the platform that has the most traction for the least amount of money.
Well, yeah, well said on that. And you're right. I've noticed that as well, as that it has been cyclical on that. And even to that extent, I didn't start video until about 2 years ago. And maybe TikTok is like that natural extension because it is shorter form video content than what I'm doing on YouTube. What's worked for you in growing? I mean, a million followers is no joke. Like what's worked? And then maybe there's like a follow-up to that. Like what do you see not working for other people? Because for every person like you that has a million followers, there's probably 10,000 people that aren't getting any traction. So I get two-part question. What's worked for you? And then what are you seeing people do that isn't working or perhaps hindering their growth?
A couple things. So first and foremost, the big thing is liking what you're talking about. It's completely impractical to do this if you're not passionate for an extended period of time. I'm sure just like with your podcast, you just can't keep doing it if you don't like it. So there has to be that like authentic, genuine love for whatever you're talking about. And people can tell when it's authentic. Mm-hmm. That's a big one. People can sniff that out really easily. I'm sorry. What was the question again?
What's worked for you? Let's just cover that one first and then we could go to the other one after.
Okay. What's worked is value add content. I pull my hair out every day when I go onto LinkedIn and I see, I call it TBC, terrible broker content. And what TBC is are posts just listed, just leased, under contract, sold, useless posts that only benefit the person posting. Whereas on social media, you really should be doing the exact opposite and post for the consumer instead of yourself. And so my strategy has always been to post value add content for the consumer rather than myself. And something I noticed that I think you'll be able to relate to, I manage and lease to 110 tenants. And so I fill the shoes of the landlord often. And I obviously have the perspective of the landlord often. What I noticed in TikTok when I got chewed apart on a post, consumers don't like the landlord perspective. They want the tenant perspective. So that was a shift that I had to make. Stop posting like a landlord and start posting like a buyer or a tenant to relate to more people.
I love that point that you brought out about TBC, terrible broker content. I love it. And I couldn't agree with you more. I've said this to people before as well, as that nobody is going on a social media to see a commercial. They aren't. If in fact, that is interrupting their experience if they see a commercial. And far too often, people, exactly what you said, is that they're posting just sold, just leased, or it's an infomercial for their business. And to the user experience, they're not going on there to see that unless they just so happen to be interested in that exact topic at the exact time, which is very remote. The only feedback they're going to get are from people that are within their small social circle. So it might be someone saying, hey, congrats on the deal. Or maybe it's just somebody that's in the market and they just want to congratulate them. That's the extent of how far that marketing is ever going to go. And I suppose from like a top of mind awareness standpoint, maybe I don't post any of that personally. Like I'll never post it just listed, just sold, ever. But I can see how some people might want to have that top of mind awareness. And I suppose posting something is better than posting nothing. But I completely agree, and I echo exactly what you said, is add some value, add something to the discussion that's beyond just a superficial infomercial. So could you give me some tips on what's worked? And also, just so everyone knows, we have your TikTok link in the comments. So I encourage people to go and check it out after, because it's fascinating, your content. And I do want to talk about that a little bit more. But in diving into that value add on how you can actually add more to the people that are looking at it, what's some things that you've done that have worked?
Honestly, so I have the distinct privilege of growing up in a real estate household where I grew up in warehouses. Like, this was everything we ate, slept, and drank was real estate, real estate, real estate. When I hopped on TikTok at the beginning, I remember a comment or a DM or something, and it essentially was like, I had no idea you could lease out a house and make money. And that was like, oh my God, like, people don't realize you can lease residential real estate. If they don't realize that, they definitely don't realize that you can transact commercial real estate. Commercial is this funny thing where we all use it all day, every day, and most people don't know anything about it. So what I have found to be useful, to be entirely honest with you, are going to be like really, really basic tips about leasing, buying, negotiating. You know, a lot of people don't even know you can negotiate rent. I negotiate rent for a living on the landlord side, and I give out amazing deals all the time. And I do. So it's really just help. Like, I genuinely just want to help people. And I think because it's just so genuine and authentic, you know, the more you give, the more you get. I think people notice that and react well to it.
Yeah, clearly. And I think that shows just in the success you've had and the followers that you've got. I've noticed a theme in a number of your videos that you talk up commercial quite a bit, but you also talk about residential. And I'll say it as correctly as I can, because I don't want to sound like it's denigrating residential by any means. You can say that if you want to, but I'm not going to put those words in your mouth. It sounds like you're pro commercial, pro industrial, but perhaps less so on the residential. That's been a common theme that I've seen.
So my grandfather, when my father was growing up, they had hotels, they had motels and residential. And my dad told me every night during dinner, Gramps would, the phone would ring on the wall. Gramps would pick up the phone, issue, and he'd have to leave during dinner. And as a result, my dad never wanted to pursue residential, because when he started into commercial, he realized that we operate within business hours. Tenants are responsible for a lot more of their own maintenance and repairs. And it's more of a hands-off sport for all intents and purposes. So I grew up hearing that from dad, you know, and my best friend is a residential broker. So I see it with her too. She's working Saturdays, every day, Saturday, Sunday, and around the clock. It's just a very different experience for, as a residential broker versus a commercial broker or investor. Another thing is, first, you know, most people are more comfortable investing in residential just because if you're buying a house, you have to transact residential. And a marketing tactic is like, I am a marketer for commercial real estate. What is my villain? Choose something that you're always just going to dog on. And something I choose to dog on is residential because it's triggering. And so many people are like, nobody else does that. So I have made residential my villain, for better or for worse, but I also genuinely believe what I'm saying. So there is that element of truth.
Yeah. Even for my own self. So I started in commercial in 2005, but in 2004, I actually did a year of residential brokerage first. And I'd also invested in some houses along the way. So I have experience as both a residential investor and a little bit of experience as a broker. And now that I've switched over to industrial and my portfolio personally is also industrial, I would never go back either. So I completely agree. And the majority of people are familiar with residential and they don't even have an understanding of what commercial, let alone industrial is. So with creating a little bit of controversy, I've seen some of the comments. How do you respond to, because anytime you trigger someone, if you're intentionally creating a villain and you're triggering them, you're bound to get some negative comments. How have you handled that?
Sure. Well, the thing is that negative comments are a good thing because they boost engagement. So I love my negative comments. I mean, trust me, I have been ripped to shreds. But the reality is like, this rule applies to every social media platform. The longer you can keep the viewer on, the more the platform is going to give you visibility. So if I make a post and I upset someone and they take it to my comment section, they're inevitably watching the post more than just scrolling away. And so, like, sometimes when I have negative posts, I'll egg them on, bring them back. Let's keep it running. Let's keep going. And people get so angry and emotional. And all I have to say are a couple words to re-trigger them. So it's really an engagement play for more views.
It's brilliant. So you not only deflect it, you lean into the controversy. That's good. It's beneficial to the platform. And I would agree. I think that anytime someone achieves a certain level of success in the public eye, like a digital soapbox, as it were, you're going to take some shots. And I think that in itself probably keeps people from getting too much into social media in the first place. And going back to that TBC that we talked about, I think that's why some of the people put that content on there, is that that's safe. It's boring as AF. It's super boring content, but it's safe. And for someone that's just trying to dip their toe into social media, that's perhaps the easiest thing to do. What do you say to somebody that doesn't have your confidence, doesn't have your belief that this is all good in the long term for future success? What do you say to someone that is a TBC creator?
That's a great question I've never been asked before. We work in a really, really fascinating industry where our leaders and a lot of our competition and a lot of our clients made their business without the internet. Point blank, don't need it, don't want it. And what I'm seeing is the biggest commercial real estate brokerages in the world right now do not have an eye on marketing through social media the way they should. And I know why. It's because their decision makers are like, you don't need that. Just hit the phones. Let's go. But the reality is that a large majority of that workforce and that age group, they're out the door in the next 10 years tops. And what's going to happen is that when we lose a majority of the workforce, well over probably around 60%, people are going to take to the internet to figure out who their newest broker is. Maybe it'll be a cold call or a letter. You know, the traditional marketing tactics still work, and I still do them. But I remember when I was getting into real estate, somebody told me that you needed to be the mayor of your town. And that's why in the 90s, you would see your residential broker's face on the bus stop and on a billboard and on the grocery store carts. Well, the reality is that nobody's looking at those anymore. They're looking at their phones. And so I'm positioning myself to be the first person you see in 10 years when all of my competition has disappeared and they died. No, just kidding. When they retire. So to the brokers who create TBC, you're onto something. I understand what you're doing. But it's really hard to stand out when you're doing the same thing as everybody else. It's impossible. Why would an owner go for any broker on LinkedIn if all post are the same things? Nobody's differentiated at all whatsoever. So this industry, as you know, is a long play. And my long play is my bet on digital marketing, which I feel like is not a bet, but I understand that in our industry, it's just been really reluctant to adapt. And I just find that, like, for somebody like you with your podcast, like, it'll be nothing but to your benefit. It probably already is. And I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, it is. There's no question. There's a reason that I continue to do it. First, back to your original point, I love talking about industrial real estate. Like, it's, I live, breathe, and sleep it. I have so much industrial paraphernalia and, like, just, I am a full-on industrial real estate nerd. So I do love talking about it. It is given some benefit on it as well, though. Two points that really jumped out to me that I wanted to just emphasize. The one you said, you still do some a lot of the conventional marketing, and I just, my quick thoughts on it. I don't want you to expand on it a bit, though. I agree. Like, I think too many brokers, especially new brokers, think that they can rely on social media as a crutch and it can be like the main driving force of their business. And perhaps it can be at some point, but there's still the impetus on the broker, especially new brokers, to find ways to make their phone ring. And social media can be one avenue, but it's not the only avenue. There's still all the, like you mentioned, the cold calling, door knocking, sending letters, that old school type of marketing. So I don't think people should lose sight of that. Everything we're talking about, and this leads to the second point, is long-term thinking. And I'm sure it's been the same with you. And there was a question that came up, and Wyatt, if you can just, don't pull it up quite yet, because I just want to finish this thought and then get Aviva's points. It was about the benefit and some like the value that you're getting from it. I think it was on YouTube. The other main point is it's a long-term game. Like I'm trying to cuddle up next to you and group myself with you, who've had a lot more success than I would, but I'm going to by pure symbiotic osmosis, I'm going to try and cozy up here. When you're thinking long-term, what is the trajectory? Like, what do you hope to benefit from having this large social media presence? And that was one question that came up on Twitter. So before we get to the other one, Wyatt, the one on Twitter was, where do you see yourself in 5 or 10 years?
Sure. I realize that in our industry of commercial real estate, that I excel on the media front. And my plan is to be the queen of commercial real estate on the internet. That's the goal. And won't stop until I get there. So that's a very short-winded but concise. That's the plan.
You and I have so much in common, because my goal when people ask me is I want to be the number one industrial voice in the world. And that sounds like super ambitious, but there's not a lot of people doing it. So it's not like there's this big barrier. It's just actually getting out and doing it. And it is a long-term thing. So you can be the queen of commercial real estate. I'll try to be the king of industrial. And well, I'm sure it'll be an interesting journey as we keep working through it. But Wyatt, if you can pull up that one question, thanks for the question as well. And if you do have questions for Aviva, please put it in the chat. Still have some more Twitter questions to get to, and some questions that I still had. But if you have questions for her, please put it in the chat. Has social media helped sell properties, or is it more for business generation?
Great question. I have not sold a property from social media. I have leased property from social media. And it's more for business generation. The reality is these sites, TikTok, Instagram, I can't speak to LinkedIn or YouTube as well, but I know TikTok and Instagram are geolocal. So what that means is I push the post button and the information spreads locally. And if locally it works, it goes further. And what I have found is that it has afforded me for free the ability to get on site at a warehouse and people already know who I am. I have that all the time. And so it's back to what I was saying about becoming the mayor of your town. Okay, you're the lady who talks about warehouses on TikTok. Here we are in front of a warehouse. Mazel tov. So it's definitely for business generation, but it's that long play where it's like in 10 years, when everybody else is on the beach now, who are you going to call? You're going to call the person you've been watching shove industrial real estate down your throat for the last 10 years, obviously, mm-hmm. because seeing us on camera, and I really, really look up to you. I admire you, and I am rolling out a podcast, but the fact that you've been in it and been doing it is like, I have been admiring you from afar for a while.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot. I agree with you. Thank you for that.
But the reality is like this, what we're doing right now builds trust with people long-term because, you know, refer back to what I said about being authentic and genuine. People can realize that. And if they classify you as that and they just see your face over and over and over and you keep giving them value and you keep helping them, they trust you. I have people who trust me who don't even know me. I get calls all the time. Are you doing a syndication? I'm ready. Who can I write a check to? And it's like, I don't even know you. And you want to throw 5-6 figures at me. And so it's the long play for business generation.
Well said. And thank you for the compliment on that as well. And I look forward to when you start your podcast. And if I can ever be of help, I think I've done almost 100 episodes now. So I've kind of learned a few things that have worked and a few things that haven't worked. So I'm happy to have that chat with you offline as well. There was a question that came up, another one on Twitter from Max, which I think dovetails into this pretty neatly. What are some of the strategies that you have to generate leads?
What are the strategies to generate leads? Well, first off, I rebranded our brokerage to a heavily branded brokerage. My company is called The Warehouse Hotline. And the point was that in commercial real estate, 99% of the companies are, the branding is a last name and a color scheme. And I'll give you an example. It was 2020, right? We're at the height of the pandemic. I go into the grocery store. Mom, do you need anything? And she's all, I need 409. And I'm at the counter. There's no 409. It's like, okay, well, there's a brand, you know, the same thing, but it's not 409. No, I want 409. And that's when it was like, oh, brand. The only thing selling you on this product is the brand because you're comfortable with it. And so the first thing was creating a brand where people knew exactly what we did that wasn't like any other brokerage in town. So I start at the top with a brand. I do all the conventional ways of getting leads. I have an emailer that goes out Warehouse Wednesday, every Wednesday, value add warehouse content. But I'm doing cold calls. I definitely have a very front-facing Google strategy, always doing SEO, Google My Business. I've run and done really well with Google Ads, snail mail, you name it. I am not inventing the wheel. I'm just like planting a bunch of different seeds, right? Our pipeline, and then the chips fall as they may.
Yeah, I love it. Because it goes back to that point as well, is that you can't rely just on social media. Another analogy that I've used before is if you're playing a game of football, you want to have all your players on the team. You're not going to win if you just have your quarterback, and quarterback can be the symbol for, call it social media. You're not going to win with just a quarterback. You need to have as many players out there as you can to give yourself the best chance. And that goes beyond just having social media strategies, or even just beyond having cold calling. Like I think, and this probably, well, I'm sure you can agree with this because you're in this space so deeply, is that the people that are just doing cold calling or just doing prospecting, the older school way, and there are people that are still doing it. It's not necessarily the younger generation, but some people are still doing that. I think that they're now starting to have not all their players on the team. It's hard for an older broker to compete with the newer brokers who are engaging in all these different platforms. And those older brokers, they'll still have their clients that have probably been loyal to them for many years, but it's going to be difficult for them to attract that next generation of clients. Are you seeing that in your market and just your interactions as well?
That's a funny question. We're getting there. I don't think we're there yet, but we're getting there. And it is still pretty dang traditional here. And that's okay. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. It works. But I think the next 5 to 10 years, everything is going to change.
So expand on that a little bit more.
It goes back to what I was saying about just like what people don't realize is virtually the entire workforce in commercial real estate is over 50. A lot of them are over 60. And between 60 years old and 70 years old, what 70-year-old is going to be hitting the phones cold calling? Probably less and less. And so understanding the dynamics of our industry and how there's about to be a massive shift, just leaning into it and, sorry, there's an ambulance outside. Doubling down on what works, and it's the long, and understanding it's the long game. A lot of people will get on, and I saw this on TikTok, on social media, and post 4 times. And then when it doesn't work, they're done. And it's like, whew. But that's the thing in commercial real estate, you have to learn how to take a punch, right? Like, you could have a deal at the huge deal at the finish line. Somebody doesn't show up to closing, party's over, right? Like, you have to be able to control your emotions and handle serious business and navigation towards anything or through anything. And posting on social media is no different. Like, you have to understand that you're not going to find massive success after posting 4 times. Like, that's not reality. So it's the long play.
I love it. And as you were talking about that, it kind of triggered, not like the trigger, like the everyone getting triggered over everything, but it reminded me of going back to that football analogy. For the younger brokers out there, if you really look at your competition, and it could be that successful broker in his 60s, I love the point you made. He's not cold calling either. So or likely not cold calling. Maybe there's some out there that are still hustling, but he's probably not cold calling. He's not active on social media. He doesn't have all those figurative players on the team. So you're playing against the other team, your competitor that you're trying to compete with. He might have a quarterback out there and maybe a running back. And that quarterback is really good. It's like the Tom Brady of quarterbacks. Like, also it's a convenient analogy that he's also old. But it's like having Tom Brady, you're going up against Tom Brady, but that's it. Like, if you're a young broker and you're being aggressive and you're going out there and you are doing the traditional prospecting methods, and then you're complementing it by having a good social media strategy, like some of the awesome points that you brought up, you're now all of a sudden competing against an old quarterback and an old running back. So I love how you summarize that all, because I think that is really encouraging for people that look, get into the business, and they realize that some of these brokers have had relationships for so long. Well, they're also not going to be hustling and working as diligently and trying to put a full team on the field. I've got to stop using that analogy. I feel like I've said that like 10 times. But I thought that was very well said on that. And there was another question on Twitter, piggybacking on this thought. Being on TikTok and you being in the position where you're creating a lot of content, you also must see some things developing in this space. So Mark had a question. Any trends in the market that you've noticed through online platforms such as TikTok?
Sure. I mean, short form video is big for commercial real estate brokers. It's YouTube. It's all YouTube. Google owns YouTube. And the reality is I have a client who has a 3-property portfolio. He's really young, lost both of his parents, inherited this portfolio. He had no contacts. He was 22 when I met him. He had no contacts in commercial real estate. So what did he do? He went to Google and he typed in industrial property leasing and management. And here we are 5 years later. He follows me on TikTok. It's awkward. Just kidding. But the reality is, it's the question I ask is, it's not what do I want? It's where are my customers and clients going to look for our services? It's Google, right? If you didn't know a commercial real estate broker, what would you do? You go and you Google it. Yep. So now, understanding human nature, reverse engineering that. How can I get myself in front of all of those people who are searching on Google? There's a few ways to do it, but YouTube is now owned by Google. So YouTube is prioritizing, Google is prioritizing YouTube content. You want to pay 20 grand to get on the first page of Google and rank for commercial real estate? Do it. Or you can post a video on YouTube and get on the first page of Google for commercial real estate for free. So in our industry, I think YouTube is everything. And because that's where people, it's also going to be the first place people go to learn commercial real estate for the most part. It's been a really, really gate-kept industry, and there's not a lot of information about it online. And when you don't know about something, you take to YouTube.
Yeah, I agree. And Beverly, who's in on this in the chat as well, she said hi, and she's like the social media friend that I have. She actually guided me into doing video. So I really have a lot to thank her for on that. And that's kind of what she said as well, is that more and more people are going to be consuming video. It's time to do it now and shuffle off that discomfort. And that's actually one thing that I wanted to get your thoughts on as well. There's still a few more questions on Twitter. And again, if anyone does have any questions as we're going through this, just put it in the chat. You show your personality on TikTok and Instagram as well. You really show your personality off on that. I don't think everybody has that same amount of confidence to be that bold. How do you tell people on like what they should be doing for YouTube, knowing that most people just can't match what you're doing?
Practice. And then again, it's just having to really be passionate about what you're talking about, because you get me on here talking about another topic and it's a snooze fest. But if you like what you're talking about, the person who's consuming the content, they can tell. And if it's a snooze fest, they're gone. And so I am lucky that I have the gift of gab, and my previous experience has gotten me to comfortable to where I am. You know, another thing is like just being comfortable I worked in commercial for like 5 or 6 years before I ever posted anything about it on the internet. So it was like, I was in the dirt learning, figuring it out before I just went and started talking about it, because there's a, like you said, there's a lot to learn in this industry. And I had to know the basics before I even thought about sharing information with the world.
Yeah, exactly. And it was the same with me. It took time before I was comfortable feeling that I actually knew enough what to say. And some of the, well, I still say awkward things all the time. So it's not even like I've perfected that skill, but I say less awkward things, I think, than when I first started. But I don't think people can be afraid about that. It just, if anything, I think it shows that the person's authentic and it's who they are, because very few people have the ability to just go on and be an actor, like go on and deliver the line perfectly and there's no flaws. And even then they might have done 20 takes that didn't make it to the camera. So nobody is expecting someone to be flawless and not have quirks. And I stumble on words. I've probably said stupid things in this interview already, but I think it's a human element. Is you can never get away from that. And I think people would rather see someone being genuine. So I'd echo what you said, is just you got to do it for one thing, and just try to get a little bit better as you go on, and over enough time I think you'll be much further ahead than people that don't do anything. So thanks for those comments on that. One question from triple net income, coolest property tour you've ever done?
Coolest property tour, huh? I mean, coolest property tour. That's interesting. Probably just those, I call them the big sexies. It's the big new A-class warehouses that they're building, like those stunning new 500,000 square foot warehouses. You have to understand, like, the property tours I go on are not glamorous. Like, right? Like, C-class warehousing all day, every day. So when I get into a really nice new A-class warehouse and it just goes as far as the eye can see, I love that. I know that's a terrible response to your question. I've got some goofy showing, you know, I got really goofy showing stories and some crazy tenant experiences, but I'm trying to think of any. Yeah, I just love the big new warehouses.
I'm the same way. I go through a lot of those older industrial properties. And when you do go through a modern building with 36 foot ceilings, and like you said, if it's a million square feet, it does seem like it just goes on forever. So yeah, it's the real estate nerd in me always loves those ones as well. Are you ever going to do a book? Because you clearly have a lot of stories too.
I have no idea. I got the podcast next, and I don't know. I think I'm more of a video person than a written word person, but I'm not counting anything out.
Yeah, it's one thing at a time. I'm sure with your portfolio, your brokerage business, your social media, there's already so much on your plate. You can only dilute your efforts so much before things start slipping between the cracks. So I could certainly appreciate that.
Oh, yeah.
We'll pivot a little bit, because this one question came in and it's more real estate related. So you can put this in the context of Denver specifically, or you can just talk about it more at a macro level. Mm-hmm. Big and small REPE asked, are people still willing to take on negative leverage in order to buy cap rates less than the current debt rates as they hope for rent growth, or are the current industrial buyers just paying all cash or expanding cap rates to a point where leverage is accretive?
I am not seeing people buy with negative leverage at all. You know, I'm seeing users buy, and that's a whole different situation when you're occupying the building yourself. But my buyers with cash are licking their chops right now, because it's the only way you can approach this market in what I'm seeing. Are you seeing people use negative leverage, or is that?
No, I'm not seeing it either. I it's getting closer, like that the huge positive leverage has lessened. But I still think that investors are looking at it that if they're cash flowing on the property and maybe their IRR is going to be less than it was last year, maybe their pro forma is less, but there's not a lot of safe places to put money right now. So I think if you're still seeing some upside in the industrial space, like single family, I wouldn't be investing in. Multifamily scares me if we go into a recession. Office, I wouldn't touch. Retail, maybe if you got the right property. I still think there's a really long runway for industrial. And even if there is some softening in the next year or two, I'm not a year or two investor. Like I still think pretty long term with my money. And I think most investors are. So they might say, well, wait, maybe we just float our debt for the next year and then hope that interest rates go down and then maybe we lock something in then. Mm-hmm. But there, I think there's going to be more deals coming on the table as well. So I'm still pretty bullish on it, even if things retract a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, leasing activity is unbelievable. I have no vacancy on 110 industrial units, and I'm filling spaces in one showing. You know, line up a couple showings. Everybody wants it. Pick the best one. So leasing activity for industrial is through the roof. You know, tell me that in another product type right now,
or anywhere.
Yeah, and people need this space. It's as the internet and as your website becomes your digital storefront instead of what used to be a retail storefront. More and more people are justifying leaving, paying $35 a foot, coming over into my building where they can pay $10 a foot.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm finding that a lot of my buyers are either ready to go now with cash or holding cash and waiting for a shoe to drop because they don't think the worst is yet to come. And that might be the case.
Yeah, I agree. And the only challenge with holding on to cash is that if we are in this inflationary environment and call it 8%, and it probably will go down because that's what the feds are intentionally trying to accomplish. But let's just assume 8% holding cash right now, you're eroding 8% a year just on having cash. So it's a challenging market to try and figure out all these things. But I agree with your point. Industrial still seems quite robust. It's very low vacancy rates all over North America. Supply will probably actually be constrained as interest rates are going up. I think some developments that might have been planned might be postponed. So the supply isn't necessarily going to outpace demand. So I'm hard to say what this looks like a year from now, but I'm much more bullish on industrial than virtually any other type of investment out there right now.
It's a beautiful thing.
It really is. And maybe there'll be more industrial real estate enthusiasts like us going forward after they kind of see the comparison to the other asset classes. The same big and small REP had another question. What kind of annual rent escalations are you seeing? And do you need to be 4% or more to get the most competitive cap rate in this market?
It just depends on the space. I'm doing anything from 3 to 5%. And it just depends on the deal points. I know that's such a typical commercial real estate question, but yeah, 3 to 5, and then getting a lot more comfortable with 4 and 5.
Are you getting pushback from tenants that at that rate?
Maybe less than 5%. I find 90% of tenants do not read their lease. Like, and I find the same thing with buyers and sellers. Have you read the purchase agreement? Yeah. No, I know you haven't read the purchase. I am positive you did not read the purchase. Anyway, that drives me crazy. But I know a lot of people, they are just so happy to get a industrial space to just get in and get to work. They don't care what the increase is sometimes. You know, I'm working on a really big lease right now. And we're arguing between 3 and 4%. Everybody cares about that, but that's a huge lease. On these smaller leases, when it's 80, 50 bucks, 80 bucks a month, I don't think people even notice, to be honest.
Yeah, and if they don't have any other options, or the other options that are out there are quoting the same thing, it's always going to be market driven. It's what the market can support is what they're going to do. Tenants are always going to try and get the best price that they can. Landlords are always going to try and get the best price they can. And you try to just meet somewhere in the middle to get a deal done. Blake also asked if we're recording this. This is recorded, so we're live right now, but this stays on the channel, and then we'll also distribute it on social media. I wanted to perhaps wrap up with, and I want to summarize this all too, because I think you've packed a ton of great info into this, is that you got to avoid the TBC, the terrible broker content. You have to avoid the terrible broker content. You can do that by adding value. You think have to have a long-term approach. Don't rely on social media as the cure-all. It's a player on the team, but it's not the only player on the team. What else would you offer, or is that, I mean, I could probably kind of summarize this, everything we said in like one little soundbite, but anything else that you'd offer to someone either in the industrial or commercial real estate space, or even just someone that wants to improve their social media on what they can do, whether they're a beginner or whether they're someone that's in the TBC space?
Head over to YouTube University and type in platform algorithm month year. Before I got on this on your podcast, I was listening to Instagram algorithm 2022 November. I just keep my ear to the ground. I am giving the algorithm what it wants, and in return, it gives me visibility. So if you can learn the algorithm to the different platforms, and they're all pretty similar, keep the people watching as long as possible. If you can do that, you're going to set yourself up for success.
Yeah, great, great point. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed everything you had to offer on that. I know Beverly also put your LinkedIn and or TikTok in the description as well. So I encourage everybody to go check it out, connect with you on LinkedIn, especially now that you've got a podcast coming. For all the other podcast listeners out there, you'll have another channel which will be creating content, and there's not a whole lot of content being created in this space. So I certainly welcome and encourage you to get that going, because I know that there's an appetite for content and there's not a lot being produced. So really look forward to catching your podcast when you release it. And thank you so much for joining me on this call again. I really appreciate just all the value and insights you had to offer.
I appreciate you reaching out. I love your podcast, and I love what you're doing. I look up to you. And so thank you again. I really appreciate it.
Well, we're both members of the Mutual Admiration Society, because I'm also a big fan of yours as well. So thank you once again. For people watching, if you could hit the like button if you liked it, hit the dislike button if you didn't like it. I'm always looking for feedback. And just thank you for watching. And Aviva, we'll definitely be in touch down the road as well, because I want to continue the conversation.
Thank you, Chad. Have a great end of year. And I'll see you on the web very soon.
Sounds good. Thanks again, Aviva.
Yep.
Bye, everybody. I hope you got some value from that episode. I always enjoy getting to speak with these guests. Again, if you got any value from this, please leave a review on our Apple or Spotify page, and look to catch you in the next episode.